Good morning. It's August 13th. The time is 8 a.m. This is regional news for the Western Slope here on KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. I'm Travis Bubinick. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports six fisheries in Garfield County are being considered for in-stream flow protections. Three of those lie along the Mesa County line. According to the Sentinel, the Colorado Water Conservation Board is considering recommendations for protecting stretches of water along the Dry Fork of Roan Creek, Beaver Creek south of Rifle, East Divide Creek south of Newcastle, and other areas near Douglas Pass, Parachute, and north of Newcastle. The BLM recommended some of those lands for protection, saying they support native fish and riparian communities. The others were recommended for protection by Parks and Wildlife. The State Water Conservation Board is permitted by law to withhold in-stream flow rights to protect recreation and fisheries, so long as doing so doesn't damage other water rights. The Sentinel reports the BLM has already worked to improve sections of the Dry Fork of Roan Creek. BLM spokesperson Roy Smith says a majority of BLM creeks already have in-stream flow designations. A new study finds that solar system installations are cheaper in Colorado than anywhere else in the country. The Denver Post reports the study, an annual one conducted by the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, says solar system costs nationwide have dropped to less than half of what they were in 1998. In 2012, Texas had the cheapest cost for lower power systems of 10 kilowatts or under, with Colorado close behind. But the study shows that with medium to large scale systems, Colorado led the nation with the lowest prices, while Wisconsin had the highest. According to the Post, those cheaper prices are due largely to a sharp drop in the price of solar panels between 2008 and 2012. That accounts for 80% of the overall drop in prices. Colorado's first biomass power plant is nearly complete. Senator Mark Udall and State Senator Gail Schwartz toured the facility in Gypsum last Friday, where wood cuttings from beetle-killed trees will be turned into electricity. Aspen Public Radio's Marcy Krivenin explains.
Heavy machinery is moving dirt around at a construction site not far from Interstate 70. The area used to be grazed by cows. Now it's being transformed into an industrial site, complete with two smokestacks and metal ramps surrounding a tall main building. Starting in December, wood cuttings, mostly from the White River National Forest, will be trucked here so they can be turned into electricity. Developer Dean Rostrom is with Eagle Valley Clean Energy, the group building the plant.
The trucks that will come in here will look like a Walmart truck. The fuel will largely come in chipped, so they'll chip it in the woods for the most part. It'll go over there onto the truck dumper, and the entire truck dumper will come up, and all the fuel will then dump out of the back of the truck.
The idea is to use wood to generate electricity for homes and businesses in the Eagle Valley and beyond. To do that, the wood chips will be burned to heat water, which will turn into steam. The steam will turn a turbine that's connected to a generator that will put power on the grid.
And in the case of this valley, right here, because the electrons will actually get used here, it'll serve most of the Gypsum and maybe even up to Eagle.
Del Worley is the CEO of Holy Cross Energy, the utility that got the project going. Several years ago, Holy Cross put out a bid for renewable energy projects in order to meet their goal of becoming 20% renewable by 2015.
This will put us there. When it comes online, we will have met that goal.
Good to see you again.
Worley isn't the project's only proponent. U.S. Senator Mark Udall visited the site in early August. He says he envisions the project being the first of many in the state.
We can envision easily another five, and the sky's the limit. So this is cutting edge, it's pioneering, and we're here to tip our hat to the owners who've invested in it.
The $56 million plant will put 41 people to work in a region reliant on dollars generated from tourism, real estate, and construction. It also helps clean up the forests, according to State Senator Gail Schwartz. She pushed legislation that creates business for the plant. The bulk of the fuel used here will come from red and dead forests killed by the mountain pine beetle. She says the plant gives loggers a reason to clear those areas.
There's not enough money at the federal level. There's not enough money at the state level to go in and manage these forests. But this is the beginning of a market-based solution. What they're bringing value to that slash and brush, there was clearly waste.
There are some residents in the gypsum area who don't like such an industrial facility in their community. But overall, Eagle County Manager Keith Montag says people support it.
I think in general, it's being embraced by the community. I think the community understands the benefits of something like this. Obviously, there's always a few folks that have questions and concerns.
The power plant will generate 11.5 megawatts of electricity per year and burn roughly 250 tons of woody biomass each day once it starts running in December. For Aspen Public Radio News, I'm Marcy Krivenin.
The Colorado Statesman reports that a committee has begun looking at the feasibility of a new renewable energy standard for rural electrical co-ops, signed into law by Governor Hickenlooper in June. Senate Bill 252 requires rural providers to produce 20% of their energy from renewable sources by 2020. The measure allows co-ops to raise their rates by as much as 2% to pay for the upgrades needed to meet that standard. But the industry has complained that simply isn't enough to make the plan economically feasible. Hickenlooper responded to those concerns by appointing a committee to look at that question. Tri-State, one of the co-ops affected by the new law, told that committee last Wednesday that it would have to spend $1.1 billion in infrastructure upgrades and expanded renewables production to meet the new standard. Dave Locke, Tri-State's senior manager for government relations, said that cost simply couldn't be spread across the co-op's customers with only a 2% rate increase, at least not in 6.5 years. Environmental groups reportedly disputed those costs. Committee members on Wednesday said the plan might be feasible if the providers started buying renewable energy credits, but admitted that plan was most likely a short-term solution. Mike Kopp, the manager of corporate affairs for IREA, another co-op affected by the law, said those credits create extra costs without any benefits to consumers. According to the Statesman, some committee members felt Wednesday's talks had discussed all the options for making the new law work for co-ops. Still, the committee will meet on September 4th to discuss whether more legislation could help electrical providers meet the new standard. The Delta County Department of Health and Human Services on Wednesday announced the second and third confirmed cases of West Nile virus for this year's season. According to a press release, the county says the second case was confirmed on August 1st in a woman between the ages of 50 and 59 in the North Fork area. She reportedly first experienced symptoms of the disease on July 24th, was hospitalized, and is currently recovering. The third case was confirmed just a day after on August 2nd in a man around the same age who first experienced symptoms earlier on July 10th. That man is also currently recovering. The release reminds the public that the height of West Nile season is late July through early September and that most people infected with the disease don't show any symptoms until 3 to 15 days after being exposed. The health department says it is continuing to collect mosquito samples to track the virus in the county. And with the height of the fruit season is approaching here in western Colorado, for this week's IC Change Report, we decided to zoom out a bit and look at how Colorado's biggest fruit crop fits into the national scene. A few weeks ago on the Almanac, an IC Changer named Megan Hines from Wisconsin said apples seemed to be riper earlier than usual in her state. We asked around, and here's what we found out.
Yes, they are. I'm guessing they're about 2 weeks ahead of time.
That's Anna Maynard, head of the Wisconsin Apple Growers Association.
There's normally this window that it seems to vary by 2 weeks early to 2 weeks late.
So that's good info for Wisconsins. But why should our Colorado listeners and IC Changers care? Can those year-to-year fluctuations in other states, or even across the country, have an effect on apple growers here in western Colorado?
Well, it does have some effect on us. The apple market is really controlled by Washington State because their production is huge.
Tom Alvey is the president of Rogers Mesa Fruit outside of Hotchkiss. He started growing apples in the valley in 76, and he's been packing and shipping organic fruit from area growers since the company was founded in the early 80s. He says just a few years ago, Rogers Mesa was shipping North Fork Valley fruit all the way to the East Coast. But since organic and local foods are becoming hipper every day, they can now ship most of their product to the Front Range instead, to big names like Whole Foods and Vitamin Cottage. Some of their fruit still winds up in nearby states like Texas and Arizona, so they keep an eye on the national market. But as Alvey tells it, they don't have to watch too closely.
For organics, we're we have a nationally significant production. And so we're able to control our markets a little better than a conventional packing and sales organization would.
Still, Alvy says getting his apples on the market earlier can boost sales.
It is always a plus to have the first fruit in the market.
Last year was a good example.
The determining factor for when we get fruit to market is bloom time. And last year it was an early bloom. We were ahead of normal by a couple of weeks for when we bloomed. We had a very warm, dry spring.
Warmer temperatures made apples ready to hit the front range sooner, which helps, because when Coloradans in urban areas don't see valley fruit on the shelves, they have other options.
If we're late, like we will be this year, there can be a situation where other areas are already supplying fruit, and so it's a little harder for us to get our buyers geared up and excited about paying a little more for Colorado fruit if we're late. That'll be an issue this year, but I don't think too big a one.
Though consumers are generally willing to pay a premium for the Valley's organic apples, if they're not there when consumers want them, cheaper conventional apples from places like, say, Wisconsin, might look just as tasty. All the same, the national market isn't a huge concern for Rogers Mesa Fruits or other local organic growers. The organic market is growing for sure, but it's still a niche market, so the economics of conventional growing don't always apply. And according to Alvy, neither do the economic incentives.
The decision to go organic, if it's made just economically, is a bad decision. If you don't have belief in growing organically, if you don't see the positive benefits of it, if you're just doing it because you think it'll help your bottom line, you'll never stick with it. It's hard. It's harder to grow fruit organically by far than it is to grow it conventionally.
Alvy says this year's apple crop is down from last year, partly because of the late bloom, but also because apples tend to produce less after an above-average year. So even though the organic industry isn't restrained by the large-scale economics of conventional growing, there's still a variety of factors that affect its success. The harvest size, timing, and the national market being just a few.
Those are big concerns because none of us can grow just as a hobby. You know, if the fruit isn't making money, we have to be concerned about that. No matter what our philosophical attitude is, we still have to be able to pay the bills at the end of the day. So there's stresses from a number of different directions.
I See Change is a crowdsourced reporting project with KVNF that draws on community observations about seasonal shifts in the weather. Have you seen changes this week? Share your observations at thealmanac.org. Thanks for tuning in this morning. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.